Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking News for Thursday, the 28th of March 2013. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Tom and Vara Williams. Your readers today are Jean Carswell.
Hello.
Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
And Pam Tilbury.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. Lighting Up Time ends today, Thursday the 28th of March at 5:50 a.m. and begins at 6:30 p.m. British Summer Time begins on Sunday the 31st of March. Clocks go forward 1 hour. This means that on Wednesday the 3rd of April, Lighting Up Time ends at 6:34 a.m. and begins at 7:42 p.m. If you know somebody who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. I'll repeat that, 01962 862 826. The main headlines this week are: final hurdle cleared as Silver Hill gathers pace, Alfred bones removed from city churchyard, and we're only here for the beer. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Jean?
Yes. Final hurdle cleared as Silver Hill gathers pace. Secretary of State approves compulsory purchase of land. The government has removed the final hurdle for the redevelopment of Silver Hill in Winchester, although strong local opposition remains to the scheme. Eric Pickles, Secretary of State for Communities and Local Government, has written to the City Council approving the compulsory purchase order, which will allow the developers to secure the land ownership and start work. Mr. Pickles said the scheme was in the public interest and would help the social, economic and environmental well-being of the area. But critics of the £135 million scheme said it was out of date and the economic recession will force it to be amended. Architect Robert Adams said, "We are dealing with a scheme based on a decade-old view of retail. I think we are going to see a lot of planning applications to vary the scheme." But Keith Wood, City Council leader, said, "This is good news for Winchester. It allows us to press ahead with much-needed improvements for the Silver Hill area and shows the huge confidence that exists in the economic future of Winchester. Now we have the decision which unlocks a £100 million scheme to redevelop a vital part of the city." Speaking at last Thursday's Winchester Town Forum, he said, "We met today with the developers and they are very anxious to move the thing through. It's a fairly old scheme and there are some adjustments we may have to do." An inspector's report will give more detail on the Secretary of State's decision. The next steps will be for the City Council to work on a timetable with development partners, Henderson Global Investors. Martin Perry, Development Director at Henderson Property, said, "We are encouraged by the strong support that we have received from the local community, ranging from business to the City of Winchester Trust, and look forward to moving ahead with the next stage of development of this exciting scheme. The redevelopment covers 6 acres, around a quarter of Winchester city centre, and is the largest in the area since the Brooks Centre was built in the late 1980s. The proposals include shops and flats around a network of streets that link Friars Gate and the Broadway. There will be a new public car park and bus interchange. The development will replace the existing surface car parking, the bus station and buildings from the 50s and 60s. A public inquiry into the CPO was held last September. There were around 30 objections to the CPO from residents and pressure groups. Mr. Adams said the development will loom over and dominate the historic city centre. The real worry and damaging thing about this is its height and mass, which are now established. The other aspect is that it has been done by one hand, Allies and Morrison, with one house style. Keith Lehman, chairman of the City of Winchester Trust, said he was broadly supportive, but said he thought there were too many one-bedroom flats. One-bedroom flats tend to stick in the Winchester market. They are not as popular as planners think they are, he said. Excuse me. Economist Julian Chisholm of Arthur Road Hyde, who spoke against the development at the inquiry, said, "It is a sad day for Winchester. Events are showing that my suggestions about the future are becoming fact, and the pressure on the High Street from Silver Hill will be even greater. I would be quite surprised to see the scheme go ahead in its current form." But Neil Marriott, Deputy Vice-Chancellor at the University of Winchester and former Dean of its business school, said the development could boost local business. He said, "At a time of sustained recession, an earliest possible start to this major investment in the city is to be welcomed."
Alfred bones removed from city churchyard. Archaeologists take skeletal remains to secret location. Bones that could be King Alfred the Great have been removed from a Winchester churchyard. Amid great secrecy, archaeologists exhumed the unmarked grave at St Bartholomew's in Hyde on Monday. Human skeletal remains were found and have been taken for storage at an undisclosed location. The work was undertaken with no pre-publicity because there were concerns about the security of the site, said a diocesan spokesman, Nick Edmonds. Mr. Edmonds said, "People were concerned about someone turning up with a pickaxe and doing some DIY on the grave." An unnamed TV company was present at the operation, which started at dawn behind screens and took about 10 hours. Mr. Edmonds declined to confirm any financial details of any agreement between the church and the TV journalists. The excavation was approved by the Chancellor of the Diocese of Winchester, Judge Christopher Clark, QC, whose order imposed confidentiality on the proceedings. Before the work began, the Bishop of Basingstoke, the Right Reverend Peter Hancock, and Reverend Canon Cliff, a Bannister, rector of St Bartholomew's, led prayers at the grave. Canon Paul Townsend of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Portsmouth was also present. The work was commissioned by St Bartholomew's, supported financially by Hyde 900, the community group. Hyde 900 had been beavering away for 3 years to gain permission, but the huge media interest over the recent confirmation of the discovery of Richard III's bones has hastened the process. No formal permission for scientific investigation has yet been given, although approval must be viewed now as a formality. The final authority rests with Judge Clark, QC. Mr. Edmonds added, "Understandably, there's widespread interest. For now, we can't say any more about the remains, their nature or whereabouts, but promise to keep people updated where we can. Although no application has yet been made to carry out any scientific investigation, we do acknowledge that there's a local interest in learning more about exactly what this grave contained. This would be possible by means of a faculty application to the consistory court of the diocese. This could be made by St Bartholomew's Church or by a private applicant, which could be Hyde 900. This will be subject to the court's satisfaction with everything proposed, both legally and ethically. Whatever happens, the remains will stay in the care of the church and the consistory court until they are reinterred." Mr. Bannister said, "I'm very pleased and relieved that this sensitive procedure has completed successfully and that the contents in the grave are now safe and sound. Although we know there's a historical interest in this site, Our chief concern this week has been to ensure that the exhumation of human remains from a consecrated Christian burial site has been fulfilled in a reverent and dignified manner, on the Chancellor's advice and order, with all diligence to professional standards and best practice. And there is a sort of mix of three photographs, one of King Alfred's statue, one of St. Bartholomew's Church, and in the middle, the Bishop of Basingstoke leading prayers, the unmarked grave with the rector of St. Bartholomew's. They're joined by Canon Paul Townsend, a Roman Catholic priest in charge of the Hampshire Downs parish.
We're only here for the beer. The third annual Winchester Real Ale and Cider Festival took place at the Guildhall last weekend. The sold-out bonanza, which ran on Friday and Saturday, boasted local food, live music and tutored tastings, in addition to the more than 100 real ales, ciders, perries and foreign bottled beers. Punters were schooled in how to correctly taste a beer by award-winning author and beer blogger Pete Brown. The festival, organised by the South Hampshire branch of the Campaign for Real Ale, the CAMRA, returned to the Guildhall in 2011 after a 28-year absence. Key sponsors were the Flower Pots Brewery, Itchen Valley Brewery, Langham Brewery and Bowman Ales. Trinity Winchester was this year's nominated charity. And there is a picture of 10 very smiling chaps all raising their beer glasses to us, and one lady who is sort of empty-handed, and each of the beer glasses is in a different state of being emptied.
That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Bartlett, Fred Bartlett, suddenly at home, aged 74. Calland, Margaret Calland, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 79. Casey, Karen Casey, at home, aged 54. Dixon, Barbara Dixon, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 76. Goldie, Betty Goldie, at Abbots Barton Nursing Home, 10 days short of her 104th birthday. Harper, Daisy Harper, aged 82. Hutchings, John Hutchings, aged 78. And Tom, Lorraine Tom, peacefully and unexpectedly. Christian comment this week is read by Jean. Thank you, Jean.
And it's headed Education Frees Us to Think. It's written by Canon Rowley Rehm. A new Archbishop of Canterbury has just been enthroned in his cathedral, and attention has inevitably focused on what he has to say about the economy. However, as our children enjoy their Easter holidays, I want to turn instead to what a previous Archbishop said about education. Michael Ramsay was the 100th Archbishop of Canterbury from 1961 to 1974. He talked about education as the drawing out of the powers of the mind, spirit and body, the evoking of a reverence for the truth. Early in his rule, the church was rocked by the publication of a book by another bishop called Honest to God, which claimed that God was to be found deep within ourselves rather than outside us in heaven. What the church needed was someone unafraid of the truth wherever it might be found, someone who would not dismiss this argument out of hand but test it. Archbishop Ramsay was only human, and his initial reaction to this upset was not without hostility. However, over time, he produced arguments pointing out the weaknesses of the author's position. Today, few would accept Honest to God as gospel truth. not because anyone has been forced to disbelieve what was written, just because the reasons for believing it are not strong. Education can give us this advantage of having a reverence for truth. Debates are easily polarised. Newspapers have their slants on issues. It's a great gift to be able to make up your own mind about the strengths and weaknesses of ideas and arguments without being dictated to by public opinion. But Archbishop Ramsay's quotation has more to offer. It suggests that through education, our best powers will be drawn out. And this was vividly shown at the recent service of thanksgiving in Winchester Cathedral for King Edward VI School, Southampton. All manner of talent was on display to celebrate the school's foundation in 1554. But what most impressed me was the courage of the ballet dancers, en pointe, on our treacherous flagstone floor. The grace they lent the service spoke volumes about the dedication of all the pupils and their pursuit of the truth with body and spirit, as well as mind. Our children work really hard at school, and we should honour them and their teachers as they prepare for exams. Those of us who are no longer under this pressure may be in a better position to appreciate just how much education frees us to think and then to love whatever truth we discover.
Now we have letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by Brian. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, and it's from Roy Gentry, who says, Rugby Club owes us an apology. Sir, read the letter from Mr. Martin in the Chronicle of March the 21st. Nobody was more disappointed and saddened than I to be told that the land acquired for rugby pitches in Alsford it no longer met the Alsford RFC's aspirations. Having been assured by the chairman and president in November 2011 that this was what they wanted, to be told a year on, 5 months after the land was purchased, that it was not, and moreover, it was all my fault, is a complete slap in the face, not to mention being hurtful and unfounded. The town council in general, and me in particular, have gone out of their way to help the club. They've spent time and resources in investigating the possibility of a compulsory purchase order, had long and protracted negotiations with the landowner, negotiated a unique arrangement with the City Council to allow the purchase of land, financed its purchase, obtained change of use planning permission, and invested £50,000 in a new car park extension to meet a planning condition for rugby pitches. If it had not been for my efforts, facilitated by the Town Council, none of this would have occurred. No land would have been acquired. Now to be accused of putting the process at risk shows a complete lack of understanding of the facts. The position the club is in is the result of their own incompetence, ably assisted by the RFU, who appear to have unrealistically changed their aspirations. I've not spent over 5 years on this project only to see the club ruin everything as we approach the final hurdle. Even now, I and the Town Council are prepared to assist the club if they would be realistic. We've offered to facilitate the financing and implementation of the project on the 3.8 acres of purchased land. I cannot think there is a more ungrateful group of people in the county, and if there's any apology required, it's from the chairman and president of the club to me and the town council, and perhaps now from Mr. Martin. And that's from Roy Gentry, Station Approach, Alsford.
Rotarians put on an afternoon of fun, says Mary Bulbeck. Sir, I recently attended the Rotary Club Tea Party for Seniors, held at Itchenabbas Hall, and would like to thank the members of Rotary for an entertaining afternoon. Guests were collected by minibus or car to enjoy a cup of tea on arrival, followed by entertainment organised by Eileen Berry, with young and slim ballet dancers, an excellent singer with songs from the shows, as well as the Spice Boys. After a delicious tea, there was barbershop singing, bingo, and a raffle before a good old sing-song. Yes, it was an afternoon to remember. and that's from Mary Bulbeck, Springvale Road, Kingsworthy.
Charlotte Farmer writes, how cycle helmets could cost lives. Sir David Malone asks, letters March the 14th, can anyone give me a sensible argument against cycle helmets being compulsory? I can. Studies have shown that drivers leave less space when overtaking cyclists wearing helmets, so they are at greater risk of a dangerous accident. Until motorists can be educated not to do this, compulsory helmets might actually cost lives. Charlotte Farmer, Abbotsand Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Paul Lewis says, footfall, not rent, is the biggest problem. Your reader, Tony Mundy, in Letters of March the 21st, seemed to have a false impression of what I said in the Chronicle report about closing our shop, Your Life, Your Style, in the Brooks, Winchester. The reason is not, contrary to his assumption, extortionate rent. In fact, the Brooks management has been very helpful. Costs were a factor, but so was the lack of footfall. We needed more sales, and the City Council, while giving good support to business in general, has not done enough to drive shoppers in our direction. Mr. Mundy is also wrong to think that I believe the future lies with shopping online. That may be true of my future, but online is simply another option. The great majority will continue going to shops, seeing actual products and talking to real people. However, shops, landlords and the government need to adapt to the current economic situation. Winchester is a beautiful city and the people are very friendly. That's why, although we're now an online business, we are still located in the heart of Winchester and will be back at Christmas as a pop-up. And that's from Paul Lewis, www.yourlifeourstyle.co.uk, Southgate Street, Winchester.
And from Rupert Pitt, closures down to rents, not parking. Sir, several shops in Winchester have closed down recently as part of a national trend. Jessop's, Clinton Cards, Blockbuster, HMV is in administration and its branch may go shortly. Millett's has also closed. The receiver for HMV says one of the reasons that shops have closed recently is because local authorities charge too much for car parking. This cannot be the case. It is only £1.30 for an hour in many car parks, and some spaces in Winchester are free for 30 minutes. Car owners are grossly subsidised, because if the land for parking were to be used for houses, flats or shops, they would bring in three times the income. The reason many shops close is because the landlords want too much in rent. Note that Jessop's, HMV and Blockbuster went into administration before the end of December. If they had waited until January, they would have had to have paid 3 months more rent. When the Plain and Fancy wine bar in Jury Street closed, the landlords left it unused for months, presumably because they had taken so much rent they did not need to let it and could hold out for a higher rent. In the way that bankers have given us a financial heart attack and starved small businesses of loans, landlords have helped to close down businesses. And that comes from Rupert Pitt, Park Road, Winchester.
Recession is for others to endure, says E. Wright. Last September, you reported that the basic allowance payable to councillors in all but one of the local authorities, Gosport, within your circulation area, had flatlined during the last financial year. Hampshire County Council paid the biggest allowance because it had the biggest budget and workload, and you contrasted the overall local situation favourably with other parts of the UK. Comparison of one allowance over 1 year, however, conceals more than it reveals, and a closer look over a longer period tells a very different story. In 1997, when Portsmouth and Southampton regained their unitary status, lost in 1974, the population of the administrative county fell from about 1.65 million to about 1.2 million, just over a quarter, while the Fire and Rescue Service became a single-purpose authority independent of the County Council. Ever since, there has also been a steady trend towards privatisation and centralisation of services. In the last year of the old County Council, 1996-97, with its greater responsibilities, the total of all allowances paid averaged £2,832 per councillor. 15 budgets later, 2011-2012, and this is up to £16,873, a rise of £14,041, or 496%. Over the same period, the official inflation rate rose by 49%. Flatlined? No. Fat cats? Yes. Now it's suggested allowances be increased still further to attract younger councillors. Provided you've got your marbles, age is no barrier to public service, and the absence of younger councillors is no reason for bigger allowances. If youth is such a priority, however, then older councillors should simply stop bed-blocking. It really is time for a lot less spin from the castle and for radical reforms starting in the council chamber itself. Don't hold your breath, though, because it seems the recession is for others to endure. E. Wright, Alexandra Road, Eastleigh.
Here's a letter from Barry Barnes. Why waste model council estate? Sir, I'm informed that there are 3,500 people on the housing waiting list, which grows by 100 each month. The City Council have said they have a target of building 350 homes over the next 10 years. I can only assume this paltry figure is due to lack of funds. If so, why have they engaged consultants at considerable expense to suggest that perfectly good council houses be demolished to build more in the same area? I refer to Stanmore in general and Wavell Way in particular. Any increase in housing density brings problems of parking, increased traffic and schooling. Yet parking problems is one reason put forward to justify this scheme. Maybe funds could be better spent at Bushfield Down. This derelict site could accommodate housing and schools for less cost without the wasteful demolition of an existing model council estate. And that's from Barry Barnes, Old Gardens, Winchester.
City Council sets a good example, says Mary Pearson. Sir, your report last week that Winchester City Council has agreed to become a living wage employer, so no employee will receive less than £7.45 an hour. This followed a number of detailed arguments for this from our Labour councillor, Janet Berry, at council meetings on July the 18th and November the 7th, 2012. It was her persistence which has meant the lowest paid people in the council will benefit. I very much hope other employers will follow the council's example and ensure no one in Winchester is paid less than a living wage. And that's from Mary Pearson, Manor Close, Winchester.
Putting Stanmore back on the map. This is from Rachel Aaron, who's the chairman of Stanmore Community Association, Winchester. Sir, we welcome the initiative by Winchester City Council to work with local groups and residents of Stanmore to explore ways of enhancing the community and look forward to some imaginative ideas from the upcoming consultation. We also welcome moves to fund housing. However, it is important that any additional housing is matched by infrastructure. We need fully to understand the impact on Stanmore of plans to increase social housing. The planning consultant's report highlighted the lack of a clear heart in the area and the challenges this causes in terms of engagement. They also drew attention to social deprivation and antisocial behaviour. National statistics show Stanmore is the most socially deprived area in the district. In recent years, it has lost the Tower Arts Centre, together with linked funding, the funding of the library, although we now have a community library in the Carroll Centre, as well as two pubs and the associated hotel and function rooms. We are hoping that the ideas that come out of the consultation will go some way to replacing lost infrastructure. The suggestion of the new Queen's Head site as a social club, stroke cafe, sports club, surgery, and linking it to the Carroll Centre, Community Centre and Scout Hut is appealing. Plans should be assessed in terms of how effective they are in improving the living environment for residents. We look forward to partnering with the community and local councils to make this happen. Rachel Aaron, Chairman, Stanmore Community Association, Winchester.
Now, Anne Gildersleeve says, contraceptives are better than a cull. So, when I read your article about the number of deer in the New Forest and the need to cull, I couldn't help wondering if it would be possible to inject at least half the female deer with some form of contraceptive. I hate healthy deer being killed. They're such lovely animals. That's from Anne Gildersleeve, Cripstead Lane, St Cross.
Bus tables before repairing potholes. This comes from Chaz Woodhead. Sir, Hampshire County Council is funding the upgrading of electronic bus tables situated at various bus stops in the city. What a completely unnecessary luxury and waste of taxpayers' money. The potholes in our roads get worse and more dangerous. Does this give us a clue about spending priorities by the HCC in times of austerity? And that's from Chaz Woodhead, Woodfield Drive, Winchester.
Well-used car park now near empty after council restrictions. This is from Jean Guevara. Sir, Winchester City Council has recently restricted use of the small car park off Hillier Way, Abbots Barton, by limiting the period one can stay to 3 hours. The car park, which, as I work in the area, I have used for years, has always been well used, for full sometimes. Some of those who used it were probably commuters, but others were definitely Winchester workers who walked into town. By 6 p.m. the car park was usually empty again, and at weekends also. What is the thinking behind these restrictions? Make people use park and ride? There isn't one on that side of the town. Free up the space so real people can use it during the day? Well, as you see, my photo, right, taken at 10:15 on Monday, they certainly aren't doing that. The photograph shows an empty space. Make a small charge if necessary, but get some use out of the car park. I find this situation ridiculous. Jean Guevara, Ashbourne Crescent, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And that concludes the letters. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, or if you have the facility you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Now, looking back to the past, we begin with the news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Brian.
And that's 1813. In some New York papers are articles written on the propriety of dissolving the Union and separating the Eastern from Southern states. The motives are that the interests of the East are sacrificed to those of the South, that a majority are opposed to the present war and are under domination of their brethren. Against separation, it's urged that seceding states would be unable to support an army and navy to maintain their independence and would necessarily become subject to Great Britain. And secondly, Dr. Hamilton of Aberdeen has published a very interesting work on the state of the national debt, from which we learn that the whole debt due by Britain, and also that guaranteed by it under the different heads of Irish imperial and Portuguese debt, amounted on February 1, 1812, to £415,016,728. The annual charges for interest, annuities and management amount to £22,636,584.
And 100 years ago, that's 1913, the county system for a way ticket system has been approved by the local government board. It has two objects: the betterment of the lot of the unfortunate man compelled to go from place to place in search of work, and the removal of the excuse of the professional tramp for begging on account of hunger. In future, 8 ounces of bread and 2 ounces of cheese will be handed to every casual pauper upon leaving a workhouse. And secondly, suffrage is not only educating suffragists, but forcing education on the anti-suffragist, who used to say that the woman who spoke on a platform was a degraded creature, a disgrace to her sex. A woman, they would declare, who ever left her home, except for the theatre, balls, afternoon tea, shopping or bridge, was a lost creature. The anti-suffragist now absolutely advises women, nay, blames them, in fact, for not taking up municipal work or becoming poor law guardians.
And 50 years ago, in 1963... 22 Hampshire stations are to be closed under the Beeching Plan for the Railways, published on Wednesday. The scheme includes a complete close down for passenger and freight traffic of the Alton to Winchester line, as well as short stretches between Andover Junction and Kimbridge, the Stockbridge line, and Hailing Billy from Havant to Hailing Island. Passenger services are to be modified on the Portsmouth to Romsey and Andover routes, both via Botley and via Netley and Southampton. Secondly, Hampshire farmers are sending a deputation to the House of Commons to lobby MPs for the county on the recent price review and the government's policy on imports. The decision was taken by the county branch NFU in Winchester on Monday, at which there was unanimous support for a resolution expressing complete dissatisfaction with the 1963 price review as a whole.
And this is right up to date in 1988, 25 years ago. Castration is not the answer to the problem of the increasing number of rapists in this country, said Britain's first female governor of a male prison. In answer to a question put at the Spring Council meeting of Hampshire Federation of WIs, Muriel Allen said men who rape do so out of an intense hatred and fear of women, arising from a desire and an inability to dominate them. Castration would be too superficial a remedy. If it would stop or deter a rapist, we would have utilised it a long time ago. And secondly, a call for an immediate strengthening of the police in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight has been put to the Home Office. An all-party delegation led by Police Authority Chairman Captain Michael Boyle, Deputy Chairman Councillor Bernard Pratt and Chief Constable John Duke told the Home Office Minister Lord Ferrers that 23 extra officers were needed immediately and a further 47 in the next 12 months.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Pam and will be followed by first person read by Brian. Thank you, Pam.
The editorial comment headline this week is Alfred's remains are not private property. When the dust has settled, the chances that the bones exhumed this week in Winchester, being King Alfred's, are pretty minimal. Researchers were extraordinarily lucky to have tracked down a direct descendant of Richard III, and through DNA analysis, confirmed the identity of the bones found in Leicester. Alfred lived some 600 years earlier, making such research even harder. The bones have also been subject to much historical vandalism. The skeletal remains at St Bartholomew's are more likely to be those of a medieval monk from nearby Hyde Abbey. But there is no doubt that in the spirit of historical inquiry, the Reverend Cliff Bannister has done the right thing in exhuming the remains so proper research can be carried out. The church is rightly sensitive to be seen to be handling this in the correct way. But certain aspects leave an uneasy sense. Why the secrecy? The diocese talks about the security of the site. But could it be that the demands of a TV company for exclusive access, perhaps in return for an undisclosed sum of money, may have played a part in the cloak and dagger operation? There would be something depressingly tawdry about that.
Now, first person this week is George Hayter, who is saying, humbled, he needs you now. Dear Peter, you don't live near Eastleigh, so I'm glad someone has handed you this cutting. It comes from a weekly newspaper, which is widely read in your father's former constituency. You've had a tough time, and I thought you might like some advice on how to mend relations with your troubled father. I didn't get on with my old man either. In my case, paternal relations never came to the sort of crisis you've been through, with your parents separating and your family feud exposed to the nation. My father wasn't a cabinet minister, and I don't think he ever perverted the course of justice. But he was rather distant, even pompous at times, and what it boiled down to is that I felt he wasn't giving me enough love. That's probably what's at the root of many failed relationships between father and son. My dad died over 30 years ago, and now I'm on the threshold of old age myself. My regrets, that I don't accept my father for what he was, that I didn't take a lead in our relationship, that I didn't help him. Despite his faults, your father is a good man, I believe. He's not perfect, but you're lucky to be his son. You're at Oxford, and you have a good life ahead of you, thanks to largely to the upbringing provided by your mum and dad. So thank him for that, even if he has destroyed your family since. You tried telling your father what to do about his lying over the speeding points, and he rejected your pleas. Yes, but it's always hard to get people to do what you want. Carry on giving him advice, but without the F word or the anger. What I failed to realise was that as I grew up, I could become an equal partner with my father, not on all matters, but some. See yourself as an equal partner, and Dad will come to see you in the same way. If you can manage to scrape up some respect for him, and his business and political achievements certainly have my respect, then his regard for you will increase. Of course, it's hard to respect him when the media labels him disgraced. His walking out on your mum doesn't encourage respect either, but in these days you're not the only young son whose parents have split with a bad feeling. He's humbled by his downfall. He needs you now. If you're nice to him, the old chap will come to see you as a friend as well as an heir. You only have one life, Peter. Don't spend it on hating your father. And remember, you're not a parent yet. One day you might find that being a husband, a politician, and the father of a teenage son isn't as easy as you may have thought.
Belgorham's alternative look at the news this week comprises three items, the first of which is headed Digging and Delving. Delving into the Chronicle archive has brought a delight to a former Winchester couple. Daisy and Douglas Lewis now live in Old Basing, but Daisy buys the Chronicle to help them keep in touch with events in Winchester, where Douglas worked as a postman for nearly 40 years. So he was pleasantly surprised to see a photo of himself clearing snow from around his Hillman Minx convertible way back in 1965. Douglas, 85, recalled that he'd been digging in the front of his car in Upper Brook Street when a motorcycle parked up, blocking him in, just as the Chronicle photographer turned up. At that time, the main post office sorting office was in Parchment Street, with an entrance into the backyard off Upper Brook Street. The photo brought back good memories. 48 years on, it's very good to see it in the paper, he said. Daisy said, we like to get the Chronicle to see who's still alive. We come down to Winchester to see the friends we worked with. Their son Douglas still lives in Winnell. Second item is headed, Can't Believe His Luck. The last thing he won was a T-shirt. So when Bishop Swaltham man Philip Barker entered a competition along with 64,000 other people, he could be forgiven forgetting all about it. But Philip, who has just taken receivership of a new £14,000 Seat Ibiza, said, I was initially shocked, but once it sank in, I was amazed. It's brilliant news, and I've been grinning like a Cheshire cat ever since. Philip's name was picked at random after he completed a questionnaire on the Energy Saving Trust website. Finally, nothing stops Anna. A Winchester Marathon runner with diabetes will be taking to the roads of Brighton to raise money for research into the disease. Trainee teacher Anna Austin, 35, of Cathedral View, was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes aged 2, but was convinced to run the Athens Marathon by a friend while working in Italy 3 years ago. Since then, she's run over 100 races, including 2 100-kilometre ultra marathons and a 50-kilometre race up a mountain in Tuscany. She said, it's difficult. While most people just monitor their energy levels, I do blood tests and injections and keep track of how many grams of carbohydrates I've taken. I was always determined that it wasn't going to stop me doing anything. Anna is taking teacher training at the University of Winchester and will run in the Brighton Marathon on April the 14th to raise funds for the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. Now we continue with items of general news, and the first one is read by Jean. Thank you, Jean.
And the heading is Council OKs City Primary's Expansion Plans. Plans to permanently expand 2 Winchester primary schools at a cost of £3 million have passed a milestone. Hampshire County Council wants to extend St Peter's Roman Catholic Primary in Oliver's Battery and Week Primary School to cope with spiralling demand. The Buildings, Land and Procurement Panel last Tuesday, March the 19th, rubber-stamped plans for a £1.3 million extension to St Peter's in Oliver's Battery Road North. The new single-storey extension will be linked via a corridor to the school and provide 2 new classrooms, music room, staff office and bigger kitchen. It means that pupil numbers at the already oversubscribed school will increase from 362 to 420. Proposals include a new pedestrian access to Romsey Road to provide access for children living in new homes planned at Pitt Manor. There are no plans to increase car parking at the school. The scheme has already been approved by the Catholic Diocese of Portsmouth. Building is expected to begin in June and finish in March 2014. The contractor will access the site by the main school entrance. No deliveries or lorry movements are allowed to take place at the start or end of school day when pupils would be most at risk. Councillors also approved £1.6 million plans for 4 new classrooms at Week Primary School to replace temporary buildings. The school already has space for 420 pupils, although there are currently 366 pupils on roll. In addition to 4 new classrooms, there will be 2 teaching rooms, staff room and toilets. The scheme includes additional staff car parking spaces. Building work will begin in September and be completed by July 2014. The county applied for planning permission for both schemes this month.
Woman's concern over house callers. A mother from Winchester was left nervous and feeling sick after four men duped their way into her home. Alison Davis, 39, said the men claimed to be home energy surveyors and that she was entitled to free cavity installation for her home on St. Cross Road. But they said they didn't have ID, and that was the first time the alarm bell went off in my head, she said. Mrs. Davis let the men in after they showed paperwork and because they were smartly dressed, polite, and appeared to have professional equipment. But she was disturbed to see that one of the men, who gave his name as Duncan Horton, had taken several photos of her home, including the back terrace. She said he pressured her for national insurance number and date of birth. I was very nervous and feeling quite sick. I felt very intimidated, she said. But Mrs. Davis, a digital business consultant, offered the men a cup of tea then and went into the kitchen to email EUM consultants who the men claimed to represent. EUM replied saying they didn't know the men and advised her to call the police. Mrs. Davis said, I thought, what are you doing in my house if you're not who you say you are? Even now, describing it, my heart is beating because my daughter was in the house and I didn't want to leave my daughter alone. She called the police, who arrived at her home about 10 minutes later, and questioned the men before sending them on their way. A spokesman for EUM said, these men have never worked for us. What we say to any customer is that all our surveyors have ID and proper paperwork. If anyone has any issues, they should call us and we can verify who the people are. Perhaps these individuals were trying to piggyback off the reputation of EUM. However, the Hampshire Chronicle managed to track down Mr. Horton, who said he once worked for EUM consultants, although he couldn't confirm when or for how long. I don't know why they would say that. He hadn't worked for them. I thought they'd gone into receivership anyway. A spokesman for the police said it appeared Mr. Horton was working for a different company, but used to work for EUM. He told officers he'd run out of forms for the new company, as well as an EUM1 instead, and used an EUM1 instead. The spokesman added words of advice were given to the man. There's a picture of Mrs. Davis peering round her front door with an anxious look on her face. And it says Alison Davis called the police after she came concerned with the four insulation installers she let into her home in St. Cross. It may have been a hoax.
Residents view plans for estates regeneration, but concerns are raised on extra traffic and parking. The 5-week consultation on the future of Stanmore is underway, with residents poring over displays and artists' impressions at the Carroll Centre, and that was on Tuesday. Proposals for the Stanmore planning framework, which will guide regeneration of the estate, went on display from 11 a.m. to 7:30 p.m, with questionnaires for people to respond. Reaction to the consultation process itself was generally positive, although concern about traffic, student parking, and where new homes would go were recurring themes. Les Paris, 65, of Walpole Road, said, doing away with the garages is ludicrous because of the parking. You lose a parking space by knocking the garage down, then you build a house and you need two more spaces for it. But the display here is a good one. I went online and had a look at them too. Kerry Goddard, 27, of Chatham Road, said, I don't think moving the community centre is a good idea, because they're suggesting moving it by a main road. If they did that, I wouldn't go there anymore. My little boy is deaf and has autism, and I just wouldn't feel safe for him. This display is really good. I didn't know it was here, but I've seen it and I'm glad I can give my opinion. The Scout Hut also looks likely to be moved, and a spokesman for the 8th Winchester Scouts said it's disappointing to us that so far Broadway Malian have not been proactive in seeking our views. We will therefore be fully contributing to the consultation over the next few weeks. Broadway Malian unveiled plans for public consultation on the multi-million pound scheme at the Winchester Town Forum last Thursday, attended by councillors and around 50 members of the public. The City Council's offer to buy a disused pub in Stanmore Lane has been accepted by Enterprise Inns. And Council Leader Keith Wood, said, "We bought it because we think it's an important site. We must get on with this, because if it's left too long, it's going to end up a derelict site." There will be another exhibition at Stanmore Primary School on Thursday, April the 18th. And the council has commissioned portable display boards that could be used at places such as St Luke's Church. The council has for some time labelled Stanmore a priority area. Ward Councillor Jamie Scott said, "The thing that has come across is, please, no more surveys. We have had near on 20 years of surveys asking the residents questions."
Winchester in top five most expensive places to live. City among least affordable in relation to annual earnings. With its history, beautiful surrounding countryside, and direct rail link to London, the city of Winchester would be high on most people's list of the best places to live in the country. But those assets come at a cost. A new survey of house prices has shown that Winchester is one of the top five most expensive cities in the UK. The price of the typical home here is more than eight times the average income, placing it well above London in the list. All 10 of the least affordable cities are in the south, with Salisbury, Bath and Truro all placed above Winchester, with Oxford topping the list. But prices in the city reflect a nationwide trend, as the report from Lloyds TSB shows house prices in urban areas rose by 1.7% last year. George Bernard, of Winchester-based estate agent Strutton Parker, said house buyers were attracted by Winchester's links with London and easy access to the countryside. "Winchester is almost the gatepost of proper countryside in the south," he said. "And people like being able to get into London, and it has fantastic schools." The 400,000 to 800,000 price range traded very well last year and probably increased more than 1.7%, he added. "Living in a city is generally a more expensive option when buying a home, with house prices around 5.4 times the average earnings across the country. But prices are more of a stretch than they were a decade ago, when they were about 5.3 times the average wage." Lynn Harris, 51, admin assistant of Kingsworthy, said, "It's expensive, definitely. My daughter is 30 and she's at home. She's got quite a well-paid job, but she can't afford to move out." Simon Hornby, 19, barman of South Wanston, said, "I think the prices are ridiculous. There is nowhere to move to here. I'll probably look to move to a cheaper part of the country, but arguably it's worth it." Northern Ireland, Scotland and the north of England were home to the most affordable cities to live in, including Lisbon, Belfast, Stirling, Glasgow, Salford and Bradford. The findings come in the wake of the government's new multi-billion pound scheme in the budget to help more people get on the property ladder or move up it with a 5% deposit.
Care time bomb on the way for counties over 85s. Future Hampshire pensioners face the misery of failing care and pitiful pensions, a study has warned. The number of over 85s is set to soar by up to 155% in some areas of the county within 20 years, but society is woefully unprepared. Now, a committee of peers has warned ministers they must act now to prepare Britain for a greying society and prevent a crisis. Lord Filkin, the committee's chairman, warned, As a country, we are not ready for the rapid ageing of our population. A big shift in services is essential so that many more older people with long-term conditions can be well cared for and supported in their own homes and in the community and not needlessly end up in hospital. And people must be better informed to get a better idea of the income they may get in retirement from their pension savings. They should be able to work later if they wish to do so. The report entitled Ready for Ageing found that the number of people aged 85 and over will double in England between 2010 and 2030. But the increases will be given larger will be even larger in most of Hampshire, including in Winchester, up to 105%, Eastleigh 107%, Fareham 133%, and Test Valley 140%. The rising elderly population in Winchester is used as an argument for development such as Barton Farm. As households age, they stay longer in houses, reducing the turnover of properties, which allows younger people into the property market. The report calls for proposals within 12 months of the 2015 general election on how failing health and social care funding will change to serve the ageing population. Urgent action to explain how an expected £54 billion NHS funding gap by 2022 will be plugged. Measures to make it easier for older people to work longer, to boost insufficient savings and pensions. Measures to require financial services companies to tackle serious defects in pensions. New low-fee products to allow ageing homeowners to use the value of their properties to stem falling income. Lord Filkin added, "This is not a distant issue. Our population is older now and will get more so over the next decade. The public are entitled to an honest conversation about the implications."
Everybody needs good neighbours. The Good Neighbour Award Scheme honoured people from Hampshire who have made a difference in their community with a special ceremony in the Guildhall at Winchester. Now in its ninth year, the scheme recognises and rewards volunteers and neighbours who help older people to live independently in their own homes for longer. The many acts of kindness that were celebrated included daily support and practical help, such as transport to appointments, small tasks around the house, shopping, cooking, time to chat, and help during the night. More than 60 nominees attended the evening, which was hosted by Councillor Ken Thorber, leader of Hampshire County Council, who said, "All too often good deeds go unnoticed, and that is why I am delighted to be involved with these awards. I am also encouraged when I see that community spirit and resourcefulness is flourishing like this in Hampshire." And there is a wonderful photograph of all these, as it says, over 60 nominees. The mayor is in the middle and they're sort of draped across the stage of the Guildhall and up the stairs and then forward onto the floor of the main hall. And obviously the photographer said something very funny because they're all giving us a wonderful laugh and showing us their certificates.
No rush to revamp station area. No quick decision will be made for the future on the future of the Winchester station area, according to the City Council leader. Councillor Keith Wood said the Council would take its time over plans to revamp the station. As reported in the Chronicle, city architects have identified the site as ripe for regeneration, with potential for major business headquarters. Councillor Robert Hutchison asked Councillor Wood when an action plan would be commissioned for the future of the station area, but Councillor Wood said, "We are very conscious over the number of developers coming forward with ideas for the station and cattle market site. There is no sense in dashing out and doing it because it should be done. We need to wait until we have the full amount of information available." Councillor Harry Verney added, "The council should look at including a new bus station in any development at the rail station to prevent people having to go into the city centre to change for buses out of the city." Councillor Wood said he would consider the bus idea and that it could be part of the Silver Hill development.
More people in favour of new homes for town are meeting here. Many people support the controversial housing development around Alsford, but do not make their voices heard, the annual town meeting heard. Resident Anne Saunders said there was a large number of people favouring new homes. Mrs. Saunders of East Street said, at these meetings there seems to be only one opinion, to be anti it. That can't be the case. I can see many advantages to some of the projects being put forward. She called for the town council to canvass wider opinion through its website. The people who attend the meetings are anti-development, whereas there must be many, such as retailers, who might be more enthusiastic about more people living in the town, said Mrs. Saunders, a former Winchester City Councillor. Public meetings have criticised town council proposals for major development on land off Sun Lane. Resident Ralph Pointer of Nursery Road said what would happen in the public meeting on April the 25th called to discuss the local plan. Council Chairman Lisa Griffiths said there would be no definite proposals for development, only reports back from four working parties on infrastructure, housing, retail and recreation, which have been consulting the public. They will produce a needs analysis which will go to the City Council in May. Those parties were set up after town dropped off proposals for 500 homes on farmland off Sun Lane, as well as relocating industry and the Perrin School there. The annual town meeting heard there will be further consultations and meetings to come up with definitive ideas for where the new homes could go. Between 2011 and 2031, Alsford is expected to find room for 500 homes. Former councillor Ken Yeldon said there were widespread opposition to the development on green fields. Councillor Roy Gentry said you could not fit 500 homes within the town's current settlement boundary, but there was space within the parish boundary, such as fields off New Farm Road and Albury Park. The big issue for traders was parking. The lease on the public car park at the railway station runs out in 2020, and that at Perrin School in 2036. Peter Tudor of Sun Hill Crescent called for the working party's report to be made publicly available in good time before the April 25th meeting.
The Governor is up for the challenge. Governor David Rogers is tasked with sorting out Winchester Jail, which is still recovering from a damning report by inspectors last week. They exposed widespread poor standards, highlighted by two disabled men who were marooned in a single cell for 23 and a half hours a day. Mr. Rogers says he will turn around Hampshire's biggest prison amid further ripples from the report. The family of one of the disabled inmates is considering legal action and will be writing to the prison ombudsman. One sister from Southampton said, "The way he has been treated has been appalling. It's a mess. They have just ignored him, really. He hasn't even had any effective painkillers." Her anger comes as Mr. Rogers spoke to the Chronicle about rejuvenating the jail. On the plus side, the only way up is for Mr. Rogers, aged 46, for whom this is the first command of an adult prison, after running Reading Young Offenders Institution, he took over last September, just in time for the inspection. He said the place was struggling. To have a ship without a captain, it was slightly rudderless. This was referring to predecessor David Ward's long-term sick leave. "It will be a pressured job, but he knows about the heat of kitchens. He is a trained chef, running one with 21 staff at just 23 years of age. But he retired of the responsibility and switched to the prison service. He enjoyed being a junior officer with no responsibility, but has obviously changed his view, as his steady rise shows. Currently, Winchester is graded a mediocre 2 out of 4. Mr. Rogers has an ambition to get its rating to the top grade. The challenge is tough. Winchester is a local prison with 680 inmates, taking direct from local courts, a constant disruptive flow in and out. But he has clear ideas. He says, "I'm very strong on morality. In this type of environment, it's very important. It's a belief born out of 22 years' experience. I have asked prison officers to act like parents, to set boundaries, to chastise when inmates do wrong, but to praise when they do right. I want to encourage good behaviour. The majority of the men have never had an adult who sets these boundaries. It is never too late. You have to keep knocking on the door that prison will work and an inmate will become ready to change. It's difficult being a prisoner. It's not a pleasant life. Some younger ones will tell you it's an easy life with your mates. But get them on one-to-one and it's different. They've lost their liberty, and that is difficult for a human. I'm not asking more from prison officers. I'm asking them to work smarter. If we are going to reduce offending, we have to start working differently to create more of a business environment, focusing on the key issues, the offenders. Mr. Rogers sees the key in building relationships between staff and prisoners, something the HMIP report highlighted as weak. It will be vital to motivate staff. I have a good relationship with them. They know what I'm here after, and they buy into that, he said. Yes, we are public service, but we are keen to run like a business. With the economic situation, there is not an endless pot of money. I have to run a safe prison, but also as efficiently as I can. That was not always the case with the prison service. We are becoming a lean organisation. He is not expecting just more from staff, but also the inmates. And he goes on, if you are coming to prison, I'm going to challenge you. If you have an educational need, I will fulfil that to give you the skills to go out and get employment. But he wants to use inmates' privileges more as a motivator. I'm keen to empower staff to use that in a rigorous manner. It makes their job better, makes their job easier. I use an analogy. I can't stand at the front trying to pull this juggernaut on my own. It's not possible. But if you get staff pushing together from behind you, get the momentum going, I need them with me, and I'm up for the challenge.
Final push to complete neurological centre. It has been a dream for more than 8 years, but now it is a reality, and youngsters in Hampshire suffering from brain tumours and head injuries are being treated in a specialist world-class unit that will ensure they get the very best care. Thanks to incredible support, Smile 4 Wessex's Children's Neurological Centre Appeal quickly raised £100,000 to get phase one of the unit at Southampton General Hospital completed within a year. But although it has accepted its first patients, the unit is unfinished and cannot open up all its beds until the final £50,000 is raised to complete phase two. The charity is hoping for one final push to smash the £150,000 target and ensure as many sick children as possible are given the best chance of survival. The new unit is twice the size of the old facilities, has two more beds, includes a six-bed high-dependency unit, and a room with flip-down beds for parents. At the moment, the ward can only operate at 75% capacity. And this is until the final £50,000 is raised. Neil Westbrook from the charity said, "This is a real legacy. When everything else has gone, this will still be here treating children, and that is a fantastic legacy for the charity."
Rat spotted in supermarket aisle. A shopper has described the moment she saw a massive rat running down the side of the aisle of a supermarket. Hayley Richards, 27, from Andover Road, was with her 7-year-old son and 2-year-old nephew when the rat appeared near the bakery in Sainsbury's Badger Farm. All of a sudden, my nephew started screaming. Then it ran up the aisle, and so we left the shop. I didn't want to buy anything from there. My nephew was really screaming because it was right behind him. The incident happened just after 9 a.m. last Thursday, and Miss Richard said she saw a member of staff chasing it after she alerted other customers. A spokesman for Sainsbury's said, "We have the highest standards in all of our stores, and whilst instances of this nature are very rare, we take them extremely seriously. We're working with independent experts to make sure it doesn't happen again, and we'll be contacting Mrs. Angela Ford, Miss Richard's mother, who was complaining to the store, and her family to apologise."
Looking for a permanent home for Model. Civic chiefs have pledged to continue to look for a permanent home for a model of Victorian Winchester. The model, built by retired planner Roger Brown, was recently on public display at the Great Hall, and this was extended due to popular demand. Councillor Therese Evans asked council leader Keith Wood what was being done to ensure the model continued to be available to the public. Mr. Brown has talked of publicly burning it unless a permanent home can be found. She said the exhibition has reminded people what a valuable piece of work it is. "I asked the leader to have an active dialogue with the County Council and Winchester University to find a home for it." Councillor Wood said the model was very popular but difficult to house because of its size. He said it's an excellent model and a large model. The issues of maintenance and insurance will take a while to sort out, but I have asked our estates department to see if they can accommodate it. We will try and help if we can, but it's a question of finding a site that is big enough.
Students join in big tidy up. Winchester students took part in some spring cleaning last week for the annual Big Tidy Up scheme. Student union volunteers teamed up with local residents and the City Council to clear streets of rubbish last Wednesday. Johnny Brayson, Student Vice President of Activities at the University of Winchester, said, "It was great to see such a fantastic turnout from our students. We take great pride in being a part of the Winchester community and love giving back to it. We were joined on the day by a few local residents as well, which made the whole event extra special." The scheme has been running for 4 years and is part of the Love Where You Live campaign, which aims to inspire, encourage, and enable local people to be proud of where they live by helping to reduce litter. And there's a fantastic picture here of about 30 students, young people, all smiling away and wearing what appears to be green bin bag tunics with the big cleanup printed on front of them.
20-year district plan is rubber stamped. Tories backed Sound Vision as Lib Dems abstain. Civic chiefs have approved a 20-year plan for the future development of the Winchester district. The City Council has set a target of 12,500 new homes by 2031. In line with changes a planning inspector made to the framework after a public inquiry last year, it means the Council retains control over decisions on where developers can build and also states that 40% of all new homes must be affordable. The council originally wanted 11,000 homes over 20 years, but the inspector increased the amount as well as identifying Bushfield Camp as a site allocated for employment, greatly increasing its chances of development. All attending Liberal Democrats abstained from the vote last Wednesday, with several claiming they were being forced to accept it. Lib Dem leader Kelsey Lerney said, "There are things to welcome in this, and I think we should thank officers for their hard work, but we do have to recognise we're having a gun held to our head. Promises were made by David Cameron and our MP before the last election that with a Conservative government, Winchester would be able to set its own figures for housing. I thought on these promises we had set our target at a locally derived figure of 11,000. We have to protect our communities from unrestricted development, but I cannot welcome this. I think this will be damaging for Winchester. But the Conservative councillors unanimously backed the plan as sound vision. Councillor Eileen Berry said, "Of course there are things in this we will not like. Everyone has a reason not to want development. But where we are, and most of this is really, really beneficial." Councillor Robert Humby, deputy leader, said not approving the plan could delay the process by more than 2 years and would mean developers have an advantage in planning battles. He said, "It's quite right for the local members to stand up and defend their patches, but the consequences of not having the plan are severe and would end up by planning by appeal. It's as simple as that." Council leader Keith Wood said, "The danger of not passing this is quite serious. It would not only be irresponsible, it would have a detrimental effect on the district over the next 2 years." As previously reported in the Chronicle, the plan has been criticised over the Bushfield camp change, with the City of Winchester Trust arguing development would damage the city landscape. Detailed plans for the number of houses at each site are still to be approved by another inquiry to follow later this year.
Carrying on an ancient tradition, it's one of the strangest ceremonies in the Hampshire calendar. Every March the 25th, families from Titchbourne, Cheriton and Lane End, near Alsford, queue for bags of flour at the Titchbourne Dole. The tradition began in the 1200s when the dying Lady Mabella of Titchbourne House asked her husband to help the poor. He refused, but told her he would give away whatever crop came from the land that she could manage to crawl around. Despite being on her deathbed, she struggled over a 23-acre cornfield. She also put a curse on the family and said it would die out through lack of male heirs should the tradition ever stop. Current owner of Titchbourne House, Anthony Loudon, said he did not fear the curse but enjoyed carrying out the tradition. He said it's very important to the family and the village to keep this going. "We also collect for charity on the day, because that is how this all started with Lady Mabella. We always look forward to this, especially when you get children involved, and it's always an enjoyable day." Around 80 residents turned out for this year's event, with some using pillow sacks and paint tubs to take the flour away. Adults are entitled to a gallon of flour, and children get half a gallon. Bread was initially doled out every year until 1796, when it stopped. But when the family had 7 daughters and no sons, it was quickly restarted with flour. The event raised money for Marie Curie Cancer Care.
Pizza shop can deliver until 5 a.m. Winchester licensing chiefs have approved a takeaway pizza application to deliver until 5 a.m. The City Council said it could not oppose Solent Pizza Delivery's plans for the Domino's Pizza branch in Upper Brook Street, as a previous operator had had a similar licence. That operator has been dissolved, and so the licence had lapsed through an administrative error, according to a council report. There were numerous objections from residents in Parchment Street to the licence transfer, including a petition containing 58 names. Nick and Sophia Merchandani said the opening hours were entirely inappropriate in a primarily residential area. Roger Backhouse said, "This is not a service that is needed in the residential heart of this city in the early hours of the morning. The operators are noisy and invasive. Extended noise throughout the night is unacceptable." Robert and Valerie Weller of Upper Brook Street said when Domino opened, they were assured trading would stop at midnight. "We have no problem with responsible trading within reasonable hours, but this idea is antisocial, anti-environmental and unhealthy." But the licensing subcommittee approved the premises license last Thursday for Solent Pizza deliveries. Counter sales cease at 1 a.m. Licensing manager John Myall urged any residents who felt they had problems to tell the council. "They need to tell us so we can deal with it there and then and not let it get worse or flag it up when someone wants to vary a license." The subcommittee also approved an extension until 1 a.m. for number 5 Bridge Street Bar on Bridge Street. Rupert Gregory of St John's Street said it would cause noise pollution, and if the rising sun and the black bottle follow suit, then he would consider selling his home and moving.
County leads the way for solar panels. New figures show Hampshire homeowners lead the country when it comes to green energy. Regulator Ofgem said the installation of solar panels totaled 14,441 up to December last year, placing the county top in the UK. Part of that figure is down to the introduction in 2010 of the government's feed-in tariff. Under the scheme, solar energy installers are paid for the energy their panels generate, so homeowners in turn are not charged for the installation. They can also significantly reduce their electricity bills. One provider, Freetricity, has now released figures showing that in the past 2 years, 1,330 households across the county installed free solar energy panels on their homes, again placing Hampshire top in the UK. Freetricity Chief Executive Officer Paul Williams said, "The people of Hampshire are really ahead of the game. With recent news of energy shortages, I believe the future really is green. We all need to be thinking about solar and renewable energy as real alternatives to expensive and soon to be less accessible traditional fuel sources like gas and oil. Hampshire homeowners recognise this, and with 1,330 already having opted to enjoy the benefits of free green energy, they will be the winners in the long run. But while Southampton has seen 671 households taking advantage of the free installation, Winchester has seen just 6. Chris Holloway, director of climate change group WINAC, said, it's perfectly respectable way of doing it, solar energy. It just means you don't own the panels until 25 years have passed. I'm not saying Freetricity is a bad deal. If you can't afford the panels they use, it's a great deal. But now you can get Green Deal loans, you should do your own sums and work out the best way of doing it."
A Winchester Nature Reserve is to spend £40,000 on a new path, linking it with the city centre. The Water Vole Trail will join the Winnall Moors Reserve with Abbey Gardens. The initiative is part of the 5-year, £1.3 million restoration project, supported by the Heritage Lottery Fund. Now in its 5th year, the programme has seen wildlife habitat restored and access improved. At Winchester's Town Forum last Thursday, city councillors voted unanimously to move forward with the plans. The route will follow the River Itchen and feature art installations leading from Abbey Gardens via the National Trust's City Mill onto Water Lane and Friars Gate and finally to the reserve. The trail will culminate at Red Hole Stream, a noted water vole spotting location, which featured in 2011 on the BBC Countryfile programme.
And that concludes our extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors and our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. Thank you to our readers, Jean Carswell.
Goodbye.
Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And Pam Tilbury.
Bye-bye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye, and do have a very happy Easter. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label in your wallet, please ensure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet. Thank you.